Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Without meaning to be pejorative, it's probably safe for us to say that Cambridge is full of geeks. Math geeks, computer geeks, gaming geeks, geeks in the universities, geeks in the labs, but also geeks in the kitchen, like Jeff Potter, a Cantabrigian and author of the new book, Cooking for Geeks.
You know, I've learned to be comfortable with it and say, yes, I am the geek in Cooking for Geeks. With a background in computer science, it's kind of hard not to fall into that category.
And so your audience is your fellow geeks.
Actually, I would say the audience is a lot wider than that. You know, from a computer science point of view, a geek is somebody, well, most people would think of somebody who's involved in technology. But to me, a geek is much, much, well, more than that. It's anybody who's curious about the details, about how things work.
It sounds to me like you were not trying to write a recipe cookbook by any means.
No, absolutely not. In fact, I usually describe this as more of a book on cooking than a cookbook. The book itself has got a collection of, you know, it's got interviews with researchers, but there's also interviews with people like Adam Savage from Mythbusters. And in his case, it was really fun to talk about, you know, this concept called A-B experimentation, where you make an experiment and you only change one thing and you do it two times and you see how that change, well, what it impacts. And so when you take that same mentality to the kitchen, say you're not sure, you know, should I do something, should I make these cookies at 350 or 375? Well, if you try it both ways and only vary that one thing, then you start to understand what that means for the process of cooking.
So you're writing for people not so much who are interested in recipes, but more how recipes work.
Right. So for anybody who wants to do more than just follow a recipe, somebody who's kind of curious about the hows and whys.
And I think you've said before that you're really not afraid to try by any means in the kitchen.
Oh, no,
you're willing to try and fail even.
Yeah, absolutely. I think not trying, in fact, is actually failing. You know, going into the kitchen and trying something and having it work or having it not work. And, you know if you do burn the dinner because you tried, well, you can always go and order pizza. But at least you learn something, hopefully, in trying to make that dinner.
You also have this interesting section that to me was very useful, and it was about what you describe as error tolerances in measuring, meaning the amount you can be off by and still have an acceptably good result. So how much more flour could you put in than is actually called for versus how much more butter? And depending on what the food is, you could have more or less of it and not go wrong or go very wrong.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I think a lot of people think to themselves, oh, I can't bake. You know, I'm good at cooking. And it's not, to me, so much about cooking or baking, but about error tolerance. It's about, well, when you throw some steak and some onions and some, you know, green bell peppers into a pan and sauté them, it doesn't matter if you've got twice as many onions as, you know, what the recipe calls for.
But baking is a very different animal.
But absolutely. With baking,
precision.
Precision is important because the error tolerance on things like moisture content or fat content become much more critical. But it's still fundamentally the same concept. So instead of it just being trial and error...
Jeff Potter and I talked a lot more about the science of food and cooking. We even got a little carried away. At one point, we got into a discussion about the melting point of the 6 polymorphs of cocoa fat. But eventually, Jeff had me try some foods he brought in to make the point that sometimes when food doesn't look and feel the way we expect it to, we're suddenly not so sure what we're tasting. He says it's important to understand that there's a psychological as well as a chemical aspect to cooking and eating. So I understand that you have a little taste test here for me that gets into what's going on behind the scenes. Are we talking about sort of the taste process?
Absolutely. So I've brought 8 different little dishes of things that I've sliced up or diced up at home as a challenge for you to see if you can actually guess what they are. So let's start with this first one here.
And I should note that I can't really tell what they are based on what you've put in the bowls because they're either blended or been pureed. So I see colors and shades, but I can't tell what these foods are anymore. All right. So this looks like some sort of clear, almost cheese-like substance kind of flattened at the bottom of a bowl. And I have a spoon here. You want me to use a spoon?
Go for it.
All right. So I have to scrape it at the bottom. Oh. Very interesting. So I thought, I was convinced based on the way it looked that it was a cheese. But now that I try it, I think it's a vegetable.
It's a vegetable. Yes, it is a vegetable. Can you tell which one? I mean, vegetable is a pretty broad category.
I think it's a root vegetable.
Okay. That's a safe bet since it's white colored.
I think it might be turnip, maybe?
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner. Indeed. So that is just white turnip that I cooked and just diced up. But it's amazing that process of looking at it, and you have these visual clues. You were saying it looks like cheese to you at first.
Right. I was convinced I was going to taste something creamy and a little fatty like cheeses.
Right.
And it wasn't that at all.
And so just to begin with the conversation, understanding how much visual stimulus impacts what food tastes like.
And your expectation of what that food will taste
Absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely.
All right. So this looks like some kind of finely ground powder. Not coffee, maybe coffee. Maybe cocoa. Okay, I'll use a spoon. It actually looks like soil is what it looks like, sort of very fine potting soil. And I'm going to take a little spoonful of it. Super fine. Mmm. It seems like it's somehow in the chocolate category, but it's really sweet. Not carob. I don't think it's cocoa. Not fine enough to be cocoa. It's not Nestle's Quick. I think it's brownie batter mix. Not brownie batter mix? Okay, I give up. What is it?
Oreo cookies.
Ground Oreo cookies.
And there's a large bowl of it there. Feel free to polish it off. It's the entire cookie, too, including the cream filling.
The cream filling's in here, too.
It doesn't look like it, but it is.
How did you puree an Oreo cookie? You put it in a little spice grinder?
Just dropped it into a Cuisinart, and off it goes. And the thing that surprises me about it, and kind of the point of this particular one, is how well engineered modern snack foods are. Because I've noticed you've gone back for 4, maybe 5 spoons of this one. And I think this is the only one you've gone back for, not seconds, not third. I mean,
that's true. An Oreo cookie is a good thing.
Absolutely. And it's something that's very familiar.
So what do you hope I've learned from all this?
Hopefully a little bit more about experimentation and getting into the kitchen and thinking, hey, how do I combine different ingredients? How do things taste together? Why do some things taste certain ways? What's the expectation behind them?
And it might make me a better or more confident or more innovative cook?
Absolutely. And, you know, while knowing more about the geekier aspects of food science and cooking will help you in the kitchen, you know, not everybody has to know that you know all the food science bits, and the dinner is still going to taste great.
Jeff Potter, author of Cooking with Geeks, thanks for coming into the studio on Radio Boston.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, from one food geek to another, our reporter Adam Ragusea has been conducting some meticulous experiments of his own regarding New York-style pizza, which he finds in short supply in Boston. So he's been trying to bake one at home. We heard about his first attempts a few weeks ago. Back then, he asked you listeners to recommend a Boston pizzeria where he might go and learn the tricks of the trade. The recommendations flooded in, and here's Adam with the results.
Okay, before we get into this again, let's review our pizza nomenclature with an expert.
Andrew F. Smith, author of the Encyclopedia of Junk Food and Fast Food, and I teach at the New School in New York.
Okay. To your mind, what are the components of a New York-style pizza?
New York-style pizza has 4 components. The first is it has a relatively fluffy outer edge that is raised. It has a very thin crust going into the middle. It must be charred or at least brown on the bottom, and traditionally it would only have tomato sauce and it would have mozzarella cheese. It's the perfect pizza. Is there anything better than a New York style pizza?
No argument here, big guy. And just to remind everyone, I am not from New York. This isn't typical New York looking down on Boston snobbery. I just know what I likes in a pizza, and I likes me a New York pie. Anyway, I asked you guys to tell me where in Boston I should go to get the best New York pizza. And we got some great suggestions. Presto Pizza in Cleveland Circle, Armando's in Huron Village, Santarpio's in Eastie. But by far, the biggest vote-getter was... Same old place.
662 Center Street, Jamaica Plain, Mass. 61752.
Owner Fred Ciampa is a man who knows how to sell his pizza.
Hi, Adam Ragusea from DUR. Thanks for taking the time.
Ragusea.
Oh,
Italian
that's
boy.
Italian boy, that's right.
So I guess what I want to ask you is, do you consider your pizza New York style?
Sort of.
Sort of.
It's an old family recipe.
Where's the family from?
When they first came to this country, they settled in New York. You're right. They're from Avellino.
Avellino.
Okay,
yeah. By way of New York to Boston.
Yes, exactly. Gotcha. Everybody goes that way.
Fred learned the trade as a young man from a guy named Michael Valerio, who himself went on to found the Papagino's chain. Fred opened up this little shop in JP, and he's been going strong here for almost 40 years. In the kitchen, his son Eric knocks out about 40 pies an hour during the lunch rush.
Yeah, that'll go from 11 till about 2 o'clock today.
So tell me about the sauce.
The time has come for me to pump these guys for information.
Give you the recipe, we gotta shoot you.
Sure, okay, I figure that. Well, I'm willing to pay that price. For my listeners, anything. All I'm saying is that I tried to make pizza at home, and I use my basic tomato sauce that I put on pasta or whatever, and it doesn't taste right. And I've read that sometimes places just use raw tomato.
Raw tomato, crushed tomato, and a pizza sauce.
And then your spices, flavor, which you're not going to tell me about.
That's right. We have to keep that secret. Been in the family for 40 years.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what it looks like to me. Oregano, salt, pepper, and a powdery substance that I'm guessing is garlic powder. Eric pulls out a dough ball, which they let rise overnight in the refrigerator. He flattens it with the back of his pizza peel, which he says is the secret to pushing out the really big air bubbles while keeping the smaller ones intact. And then he gives it a toss.
Oh, beautiful. One-handed.
That's our old-style tossing, which also is a good method for stretching it.
Eric agrees with my line of thinking that hand-tossing is the only way to get the pizza thin enough while still leaving that thick ring around the edge called a cornice. He lays the stretched dough out on the board.
And then on goes our legendary secret sauce.
Very, very bright red color.
And this here is just a little bit of extra flavor, and we do an oregano and a grated cheese just to boost the flavor.
I like this trick. A lot of people think they don't like grated Parmesan on their pizza, but if you sneak it in on top of the sauce and under the cheese, they'll never realize how wrong they are. Now, next step.
And then mozzarella, of course.
Just mozz?
Straight mozzarella, yeah. 100% pure skim mozzarella. Oven temperature's got a lot to do with it, too. You got to cook at the right temperature. If you cook too high, it'll burn. It won't cook thoroughly. Yeah. The cheese will burn first before the pizza cooks. So the great oven temperature is the 550 in that area.
550? This is remarkable. The conventional pizza wisdom is that home-cooked pizza never tastes quite right because commercial ovens get many hundreds of degrees hotter than home ovens, which is why I've gone through all sorts of shenanigans to turbocharge my oven so it'll cook the pizza in about 5 minutes. The Chiapas hang back and bake right in home oven temperatures, and they let it bake for a little longer.
Cooks in about 7 to 8 minutes, and perfect, comes out great.
Okay.
You know, just a little crispy, but still nice and soft inside.
I'm skeptical. But upon closer inspection, it's just perfect. Okay, well, thank you, listeners. I now know where to get a top-notch New York-style pizza in Boston. Unfortunately, they only deliver in Jamaica Plain, so if I want this at home, I'm back to figuring out how to do it myself. I've adapted my old recipe with my findings from same old place. And if you're really interested, you can go to wbur.org/Boston and check out an instructional video we made along with a complete detailed recipe.
Looking lovely. Quite brown on the bottom.
We baked in our communal kitchen at WBUR. So how close did I get to recreating the real thing this time? Well, let's ask Sasha what she thinks.
You know why I like this first of all? The cheese layer is perfectly the right consistency.
Right, it's like thick enough that it has bite, it has mm-hmm. tooth.
And the sauce is simple, it's not too busy, but it's just right.
This is working for me.
Mm-hmm. It tastes like pizzeria pizza. It truly does.
Thank you.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for Radio Boston.
Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing the bell.